César had confided his reluctance to follow through with it to Sorcha that last day. Obviously, his family didn't know César had left Sorcha the evening of the crash to inform Diga the marriage wouldn't happen. He'd seen Diga. The woman had admitted to authorities that he'd been at her house and left again. So why was Diga acting like the marriage was on? Like plans had advanced from maybe to absolutely. How had she gone from family friend to fiancé in the sliver of time that César had spent at the bottom of a cliff in a bashed-up car? The question tortured Sorcha every moment of every day while she waited for César to wake up and explain himself. He'd stayed in a coma for so long, however, she'd begun to anticipate that if she did turn up pregnant, this baby might be a comfort to his family. Then he had awoken, and she knew he would explain that she was meant to be at his side, not Diga. Except that didn't happen. His father had dropped by the office to explain that César had lost a week's worth of memories prior to the crash. He didn't recall the ribbon cutting on the bridge in Madrid, and was quite anxious to oversee it. El excelentísimo, Senna Montero had added, with one of his distracted frowns, the one that suggested he was exasperated by humans and their mortal frailties. Sorcha had stared, speechless, at the Duke of Castellón. César's private celebration of the bridge with her once they'd returned to Valencia had given way to a heart-to-heart, and eventually their life-changing body-to-body connection. César remembered nothing of that. How did one process such news? All she'd felt was a void inside her, like their magical afternoon hadn't happened. Somehow, she had swallowed back a dry lump and asked if she could see him. Not necessary, his father had told her. It really was. Sorcha wouldn't believe César's loss of memory until he'd told her himself, especially now that the evidence of their lovemaking was confirmed by a tiny pink stripe on a wand. Surely if he saw her, he would remember? As the doors of the private hospital slid closed behind her, her mouth was arid, her skin numb, her limbs electrified by 3 weeks of sustained tension. Rough treatment in her teens had taught her how to keep a mask of confident indifference on her face, however, and working with César had granted her certain entitlements this past 3 years. She approached the doors to the interior as though she had every right to enter. Señorita? A clerk at the lobby desk called, halting her as efficiently as the electronically sealed doors. She wore a smart, modern uniform and was well foiled by the clean peach and plum tones of the lobby. Bon dia, Sorcha said, using Valencian which she had learned from César, rather than her excellent Spanish, which might label her an outsider. She added a respectful sister, then said, Sorcha Kelly for César Montero, punctuated with her eye screen visitors to smile. We're practically twins. The sister tapped keys on her computer, then smiled benignly. I don't have your name on the list. I'm sure if you call, he'll confirm he wants to see me, Sorcha assured her. As the sister picked up her phone to dial, the entrance door swished open, and Diga Fuentes entered. Diga Fuentes y Loza de Matu, to be precise, daughter of the Marquis de los Jardines de las Salinas. She definitely looked rich enough to have more names than she could use. Her tall, slender silhouette was practically haloed in designer labels, with imaginary arrows pointing to her purse and earrings, lipstick and strappy heels. Her sundress was a fluttery cornflower blue with white polka dots, her sleek black hair a stunning frame for her elegant bone structure, lightly golden skin and bottomless eyes. Sorcha hadn't been able to fully cover the dark circles under her eyes, and wore her work clothes, a grey pencil skirt with a matching vest over a white top. Given the worry she'd been enduring, along with a hint of morning sickness, her complexion was probably greener than her eyes. César's fiancé did a small double take, then sauntered towards Sorcha. Sorcha hated her, not because she was claiming to be engaged to César, but because everything about her struck Sorcha as fake and calculating. Sorcha knew how to keep her feelings to herself, however, so she worked up the warm smile she'd perfected for César's many, many conquests. And she wouldn't even think of those women right now. She was not one of a crowd. She wasn't.